So this collection, the last one is the Samyukt Taratna Pitaka Sutra. All of this is a, except for the Parinirvana and Avatamsaka. These are all taken from first turning. So many of them are from the short discourse or the middle length discourse, collections of the Buddhist teachings. And the teaching itself is gathered from a range of time. So Buddha did not sit and give this talk that we just read in one speech. This is put together from all of these different sutras where he's discussing the exact same topic. And the topic is, how do we, as non-monastics, practice this path of Buddha Dharma? Let's get down to brass tacks. What is actually not necessarily required, but what is expected of us as followers of Shakyamuni Buddha? And though there may be all kinds of different practices and all kinds of different schools and lineages and all of these different things that are out there, and we can certainly find a million different things to practice, it comes down to three elements. And all of them are only three elements. No matter what kind of school, no matter how complex it looks, how many different deities or Buddhas they're working with, and so on and so forth, it is three things. Three very basic things. This is most important. It's important to know these three things very clearly. If you're not going to memorize anything else, you should memorize these three. Well, maybe there's a couple other things to add in with the three. But as far as it comes to your practice, these three things are the most important. Why is that? Because you will receive, at some point in your Buddhist career as practitioner, you're going to receive all kinds of teachings, practices, meditation techniques, mantras, so on and so forth. And it's going to get big. Or can be. Maybe you decide to have a shrine in your own home. Some people just put up they just set something up. And that's okay. But some people want to set something up in order for it to be an actual support to their practice. Well, now we have an actual practice to do. There's a specific way to do and tend to your shrine. And we can get very caught up in things like that. I mean, we can also do the opposite and not really care for our shrines and just continue to do whatever we want to do, and we won't reap the benefit. You just won't. Why? Well, the Buddha says that the first thing is there are disciplines for practical behavior. There are commitments. In the Sanskrit, the word is samaya. Samaya means, sometimes they say, you know, they're these commands, but you know, really, they're They're commitments. And those commitments are personal. Like when you go into a courtroom and you say an oath to swear that you're going to tell the truth. I mean, of course, today people, you know, they don't really care about doing that because there's no fear of any kind of afterlife thing happening to them, so they just don't care. But when they invented that whole thing, you know, it was like, well, if I'm swearing, that means I'm going to, you know, if I break it, I'm going to drop dead or I'm going to get struck by lightning or something terrible is going to happen. So they had this fear that if they made that oath, they were going to actually do it. Growing up with my grandfather, both of us, you know, when he was a kid, he was a Boy Scout and I did Scouts. And it was the one thing, a one form communication between he and I. So if there was something that he wanted me to do and I was afraid to do it, but he really wanted to, you know, look, you can do this. I've got you. There's no problem. And I was like, ah, you know, he would do the whole Scout's Honor. And when he did that, I knew that there was no shadiness now. Whatever he was telling me, he was legitimately telling me. If the thing that he was, you know, like I remember the first time I'd ever jumped in a river. So San Diego, we don't have rivers to jump in. They say we do, but that's not our rivers are knee deep. they're not real rivers. So, you know, I didn't know anything about a river. Been in the ocean, sure. But a river is a totally different thing. And I was afraid of it. I was afraid of what might live in it. I was afraid of how deep it might be. Or, you know, because the water keeps going in one direction, it doesn't come back. Like the ocean, you know, that goes out and comes back in. So at least you can kind of catch a current to bring you back in or something. You know, so the river was like, oh my God, I don't want to do it. And he jumps in. And I'm like, yeah, that's just crazy. Because now you're going to be eaten by piranhas. And, you know, I'm a little kid. I got all kinds of crazy things in my head about what lives in there. Alligators, giant snakes that can eat you. I mean, rivers are scary. He's like, no, no, it's totally fine. And I got you. I wouldn't do it. Too afraid. And then he did that whole Scout's Honor thing. And I thought, oh, man. Well, now I can just say I'm way too afraid to even do it, even with you assuring me that you're covering all of this. Or I can test my own fear and do it. So I jumped. When we make these kind of a commitments, it's kind of like a Scout's Honor, I'll do this. It's a no shadiness, I am for myself. If my word is worth anything at all, I'm saying I will do it. That's what Samayan commitment is. And it's not really to anyone. I mean, it kind of looks like, you know, we take refuge from a teacher and we bow to, but it really has nothing to do with the teacher. It's an entirely personal thing. And so it takes a degree of honesty to yourself. Because a teacher, you know, if you're not really that close to them to begin with, they can't see what you're doing. They're not going to, like, invade your home and, are you doing your shrine right? Are you sitting every day? Are you doing your card? Are you doing anything? You know, then they don't do that. You don't get that. Well, you can if you ask for it, but then it's really hard to undo it. You can't just say, okay, well, a week was fine. I don't want that anymore because, you know, you make that kind of commitment. The teacher has to make a commitment back to you. And they usually don't go back on that. And that's what makes it really hard, because You get married, and then you say, okay, well, I want a divorce. And they go, no, I don't think so. And you're like, whoa. And they say, this is two-way. You can say you want out, but I'm not sure I want to let you out yet. But if you don't ask for that, your commitments are to yourself, to your own Buddha nature. Actually, even beyond that, you're vowing to your own suffering self that you're going to apply all your effort that you can muster up. And maybe that's not perfect effort, but you are going to put in your best effort. You're going to put in your best energy, your best time, and you're going to do your best to make it your highest priority in order to alleviate your suffering self, to overcome the pain that's in you. Buddha says this is the first way that we have to approach this. Now, most of us don't have any inkling on how to even do that. So the Buddha gives us some guidelines. Look, here's some basic ideas. First one, stop killing everything. If that's your problem, don't go around killing everything. Especially people. You know, in the Buddha's day, there were wars everywhere. You know, we think of wars, they're something that we see on TV. Maybe we get a little bit of insight into what's going on, but we really don't know what happens in a war. But in Buddha's day, war was something that was really tactile and you could see it. Why? Because it's a bunch of guys that run towards another group of guys and they smash into each other and they pulverize each other with most crude instruments. And the devastation is everywhere. There's nothing hidden. And any Maharaja that got mad at another Maharaja sent his army there. It was all over the place. Did you guys know that Buddha's own tribe that he comes from, the Sakyas, were notoriously ferocious warriors? I mean, they were all afraid of that kingdom because his father was just a fierce, brutal king. So they lived in peace, the Sakyas, because, his father was like, hey, we've got peace through superior firepower. And trained his own son to be the most best archer possible. Which today its standard would be, we're going to teach him to be the greatest sniper that we possibly can. Or maybe the best drone pilot. Huh? Snipe anybody anywhere on the planet in a few hours by putting on his little headset and getting out his Wii. Or his Nintendo, and fly that thing over there and blast him. That was Shakyamuni. He didn't do it. He never engaged in a war. But that's what he's coming from. And so the first thing he says is, this violence does no good to anyone. And it's way far reaching. More than we ever expected. It's not that just you harm another person. Because when you harm that person, it affects all the loved ones of that person. And as we've seen, especially in modern warfare, the soldier who goes out and follows the order and comes back is also tormented. I mean, unless they're psychopaths, they have serious problems. You know, the I have a very good friend who is a commander in the Air Force, very, very high level guy. He was in charge of refueling all of strike planes in the war in Afghanistan. That's what he did. What was the other war? The Iraqi war. He's in charge of all of that. He said the dropout rate for drone pilots is huge. Because they start freaking out. They're not even being shot at. They're freaking out because the reality of what they are doing hits them. And causes them immense pain. Remorse, sadness, anger, I mean, whatever it is, betrayal, you name it. Those are all painful things. So when the Buddha comes up with these quote-unquote vows or precepts or rules or commitments or whatever you want to call them, they're for us to develop a level of a discipline where we can perceive the lack of that thing and the impact of the lack of that on our life, which is usually incredibly positive. If we stop killing things, we will tend to feel much better about ourselves. And we have to start there. I know we come to Buddhism thinking, oh, we want the whole world to be peaceful, everybody just be happy. But you can't spread that happiness until you yourself have given yourself happiness. You have to provide you with happiness. None of us can. We can only give you the teachings and guidelines, and we can kind of point you towards it. We can keep pointing at it. Which is generally what we do. We say, you know, this thing, this is not too good to do. So if you can stop doing this and maybe replace it with that, you'll have a much better go. Well, that sounds really simple. It sounds simple because, as you guys already know, you usually will do it for a couple days, maybe a week, and then go, why should I have to do? I'm not going to do. They can't tell me what to do. And now you're back to the exact spot that you came to Buddhism for. Because we get a little wacky. We forget the actual intent. We forget the first of the three practices. We forget all about the discipline. We let ourselves become undisciplined, and then we're no longer potty trained. It's kind of that simple. We get really tired of the smell in the house because we won't use the toilet. And we don't have any diapers on, so we're making a mess all over our house. And it makes us ill. The Buddha says this is how we clean it up. You must be disciplined to use it every time. Be mindful. When you feel it coming on, get yourself in there. But at some point, we end up getting mad and don't want to. I don't want to get out of bed. So then it just happens in the bed and now you have a mess. Or you're too lazy to get up. I'm not getting off this couch. And now you have a big mess on the couch. All over again. It really is like that. That's why Buddha says, you know, it's not suffering. That's not the word. That's not the word at all. The word's dukkha. Dukkha is Sanskrit for shit. Sorry if there's kids, but that's what it actually means. That's the literal translation. So he says when we're sitting in a sea of it, he's literally talking about what I'm saying. Doing it on the couch and not getting up. And then getting sick from it. Discipline is not meant to control you. There's no outer force controlling you. The Buddha will never make you get up off the couch to go use the potty. Right? Those of us with the little kids. Yeah. They're not going to ever make us do that. Nobody's telling us we have to. In fact, the only reason why they told you to use it is because you asked how not to sit in it. And they said, well, the best way not to have it all over the house is go use a potty. But nobody's chasing you with the stick to make you do it. The discipline has to be your own. And at the same time, your patience has to be your own. You have to be patient with yourself. Allowing yourself to maybe not do it so well now and then. You also have to be patient that you don't keep reflecting that when you fail to follow through, that you don't believe that that defines your character. That doesn't define your character. Failure never defines character. Especially if you try again. The try again of all things miraculously defines your character, and the failure doesn't. If you fail and you stay in your failure, it's the staying in the state of failure that defines the character. That should be great motivation to be able to just keep practicing. Okay, so I screwed the day up. I didn't do a damn thing today. I didn't do refuge, I didn't meditate, I didn't even think about the Buddha. In fact, I did the entire opposite. Well, okay. What do you want to do now? You can either beat yourself up, or you can say, yeah, and at the end, that kind of sucked. So tomorrow, I'm not doing that. Tomorrow I'm going to do at least one part of my practice. Hey, now you're right back on track, even if you're doing just one tiny part. You say, every morning, I'm going to get up and I'm going to say a refuge prayer and I'm going to say like the Bodhicitta prayer, and that's all I'm going to do. I'm just going to do that for a week. You know what? That shows your character as being a great practitioner. Really? Yes, nobody said you had to perfect the path to be considered a great practitioner. Because if you perfect the path, you're no longer a practitioner. You've graduated and you're done. The practitioner is the person who keeps burning toast and yet keeps trying to make toast to perfect it. That's the practitioner. That's why Buddha says you only have three things. This discipline and be mindful. What's the third one? Wisdom. Yeah, the third one is wait for some wisdom to arise. It's not even an act of having to do. Discipline yourself. Sit. The third one comes up on its own. It's a byproduct. It's like, how are we going to get vegetable broth? Don't worry about that. Let's cook the vegetables. Look, magically, there's broth after we're done cooking the vegetables. Holy cow, how did that happen? Well, That's how this works. Your wisdom's going to come from a holy cow. How did that happen? Well, it's because you sat and you kept your smize. Don't judge yourself against others at all. Just do your own best each day. It doesn't. Tiny size does not matter. You know, my own teacher used to tell us, if you did 100 pujas a day, yeah, that's all right. But that guy that gets up every morning and does 3 prostrations and takes refuge, that guy is on target. It's not how big and how grand and how much you're doing. It's perfecting a little bit and being really spot on. All right, and we'll continue with this sutra, because there's quite a bit of good stuff in here, and we definitely have the Eightfold Path that we'll want to talk about. Well, those of you doing the Intro to Buddhism class, you're going to be like, "What? That again?" Because it's in there, but yep, it is. Let's do it again. So we'll go back to our Sunday service, and we'll go into the meditation.